We are first and foremost a fashion company. Our mission is great clothes for confident men. The sub-product and the story behind it is a personal mission. So my personal mission as a founder is body positivity and self-acceptance and confidence. But why the brand's mission is to offer great clothes for confident men.
Welcome to Style as Identity, a podcast by The Majority Group. Join us as we get to know the designers and founders who are shifting our understanding of the style status quo. We're your hosts. I'm Lola Quintero.
And I'm Frankie Aquazem. Join us each episode as we learn from brands that are an extension of their values, identity, and aesthetic, and are super open about sharing the less talked about aspects of what they do. We're so glad you're here. Inclusive sizing is one of the biggest trends in retail, reporters proclaimed in 2022.
I have questions. Like, why is this a trend? Really, which part? And why do conversations typically start and then stop at women's wear? There, like, aren't that many brands solving for the male figure.
True. So considering all of this, we're going to unpack why with none other than Marzad Larry, co-founder of Quebec-based Why the Brand. His brand is distinctly positioned to offer wide men a highly considered, curated aesthetic and innovative line of clothes in extended men's sizes.
Yes, let's meet him. Hi, Marzad.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi. So happy to have you today. We are in New York City. You're in Montreal today.
Absolutely.
We're big fans.
Thank you.
Big fans. Never been big fans.
It's a fun city. It's cold in the winter, steaming in the summer, but it's very similar to New York, actually. But it's just a little wilder because of the French side.
Well, all of our New York friends love it, actually, that have been there. So we got to go.
It's a great place.
I love it, too. I was actually saying I'm a big fan of Why the Brand, but I am also a big fan of Montreal. For everyone who's
well,
listening.
Thank you.
Montreal was a great time. I was having a few days.
Yeah. It's a package deal.
Well, speaking of Why the brand is aptly described as being a voice for the wider man. Tell us more about how the brand came to be.
So I started the brand in 2020. We started developing, but it was an idea I had back in 2016. I've always been a wide guy, a large guy, a fat guy, whatever you want to say and can call it. I've always been and bigger. And so fashion was really hard for me because I couldn't find clothes that I liked. And I was very sensitive to fashion and I loved it. And I couldn't find anything to wear. And since a very early age, my mom would help me style stuff and alter stuff.
Go mom.
Yeah, she was the best. And she would help me, you know, we would go shop and she would help me like put stuff together. And I had that sensitivity. And then I went to fashion school and became a designer. And I worked 10 years in the luxury fashion industry and women's wear here in Montreal and in Canada. So it was like, I was part of this universe, but the universe wasn't allowing me in, really. So I had to kind of find my way in and scheme my way in by creating things for myself. And back in 2016, when I first got the idea, I was like, it's kind of crazy that I have to work so hard to just be able to dress the way I want to. And when the pandemic hit, it was kind of like, okay, well, I'm in my living room. I have nothing to do. Like, what are we going to do? And so I decided that it was time to leave my fashion job. I was a fashion director for a luxury women's wear brand. And I left that job and launched Why the Brand with my partners. And the rest is history. Here we are.
Love that. And when you were taking us back in time, I mean, we've noticed how a younger version of you pictured makes its way into marketing. Like, I know that face. So that story really isn't just like we're talking about it now, but it's also something that we can tell is part of your brand story as well. You talked about how you worked in the industry for a decade before leaving to launch Why the Brand. And it sounds like based on what you're saying, COVID kind of was that nudge. But I'm sure there were other things that you had to think about. So like, how did you know when it was time to start the brand?
I always say, I don't know if I would have started it necessarily. If I would have had the courage to start it if COVID didn't happen, because it put everything on pause. And so you had to reflect and you had to kind of sit with your ideas and yourself. Do I think that like we're ever ready to start a project? No. So it was kind of like the universe was like, go for it. It's now. Now's the time. I'm very happy that I worked for someone else for 10 years and garnished all the experience that I did. I think that had I started this project, let's say, out of fashion school, it wouldn't be as elevated. I wouldn't know how to run a company, how to run a fashion label, how to run production, how to design correctly, how to innovate. And so I attribute that to my mentor. I worked for Marie St. Pierre, who is one of Canadian's biggest fashion houses. And she really taught me the ins and outs of the business. And through the experience with her, I was able to really become the designer and creative director I am today.
What were your priorities when starting the brand? What did you know you wanted the brand to accomplish?
The mission was the number one priority. So obviously, representation, body positivity, inclusion, innovation. My biggest thing was I wanted to give plus-size men a platform that they have never had before. I wanted to give them clothes that they had never felt or lived in before. So that was the biggest thing. And also, we wanted to give them a curated aesthetic. And that was something that was very lacking and still is to this day. We're pretty much one of the only plus-size menswear brands that actually cares so much about aesthetics. And I think that's because of the team's experience in luxury fashion. A lot of big and tall brands are either sports-oriented or football-oriented, or they're a kind of some sort of alteration of a boys club aesthetic. We are very much a boys club, but we're also, our wide man is international. He's cultured. He's diversified. He's someone who loves fashion. And so we wanted to give him that aesthetic, and that was really important for us.
Yeah. You mentioned the team's experience in luxury fashion. So is that something you were looking for specifically when you started growing the team?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. So when I had this idea, I knew that I didn't want to do it alone at the beginning because it was my first company and I'd never had a company. Today, I'm very comfortable in saying I think that if I were to launch a company again, I would probably do it alone because partnerships are not easy. That being said, I don't think why the brand would be where it is today if it wasn't for the partnership. And so I think a very smart move that I did was to find partners that I believed in and that believed in the mission to help me get there. And it also taught me a lot. The first thing I knew when I wanted to launch in 2020 was I can't do this alone because I had never done it. And so I didn't want the mistakes to happen. I wanted to go fast. I wanted to get the mission out there. I wanted it to be right. And so I knew that product development, designing, creative direction, that's not a problem. I knew I needed someone who was going to be more CEO and finance oriented, which is what I went to get. We needed someone that was more communication, publicity, PR oriented, and also brand oriented, which is what we went to get. And together we created the brand. And so now we're comfortable. We got the ball rolling. And so I can now say that, like, I know where my positive points are, where my negative points are, and I'm just a much more well-rounded entrepreneur than I was 4 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely a couple lessons. I mean, many more than a couple, but the ones that are standing out to me in terms of lessons is around, like, no time is going to feel perfect. And then also, like, if you're on the brink of something and you really want to do it, don't let doing it alone stop you. Like, find people who are going to do it with you.
Absolutely. Another piece of advice that I would give myself is when you don't have the confidence to do it on your own, that's a sign that you're not necessarily ready to do it on your own. So go get the people that you need to get you to a place where eventually you will be comfortable to do it on your own. And business is a constant evolution. So the person you are when you launch an idea or a company is not going to be the same person 1 year in, 2 years in, 3 years in. So forecasts are great, but you cannot forecast personal development.
Real. That is so, yes. Wow. Nugget alert. Okay. speaking of not, cheesiest thing I've ever said, actually probably not the cheesiest, but
it's all good, girl.
Speaking of not doing things alone, you launched a Kickstarter in 2021 to raise some support. And so that's another way of bringing people in, even if they're not on the team with you. And you raised over 50K, exceeding your goal. Like, what did that money go towards?
That was such an adventure, honestly. Like, it was my idea to do the Kickstarter because we had no money. Like, we had no money. And I knew, because I had worked in fashion, just how extremely expensive creating a fashion line is. Fashion is probably one of the most expensive businesses to run and one of the businesses with the least amount of profit at the end. It is a very expensive business. And so I knew that to launch this first collection, we were going to need quite a bit of money. And to give you an idea, the $50,000, that was one part of the initial investment. We still invested personally quite a bit. So, but I knew that we needed money, but also it was like, okay, this idea is something that I think is a good idea. Is it a good idea though? We had no proof of concept. And so the reason we decided to do the Kickstarter, beyond the fact that we wanted to get financing to start the project, was we wanted to know, was there a community out there that was willing to support it? Because if we're going to launch a company because I think it's a good idea, that's not proof enough. And so instead of just going through a market analysis and doing, you know, test studies, we're like, let's test it entirely and let's see how far we can go with PR and communications, and let's really test ourselves. And so it took us a year to create our campaign. We obviously, being the team we are, we really wanted it to be at the level, right? And so right off the bat, we were like, we didn't want our Kickstarter to be an initial phase of the discussion, and then we would promise them to be better. We want the Kickstarter to be so hot as if we almost launched the company already. And so we hired our branding agency that did our logo for us, and that was an expense that was quite important. But we were able to negotiate with all of our vendors to be like, listen, we are launching a Kickstarter. If we launch it, if we raise it, we'll pay. If we don't, we can't. Like, at the end of the day, like, do you want to risk it with us? And so because of our background and because of our relationships, everyone was like, yeah, we're going to play this game with you. Let's do it. And so we had the best of the best, from production team to the branding agency. Everyone was kind of betting on us to create it, which is why we were able to create the photographers, the videographers, amazing talents here in Montreal that were able to kind of lend us their vision to help us bring the Kickstarter video, the first initial photo shoot, the products. Keep in mind, this was COVID. We were sneaking off at night to our seamstress's house with masks on. And like, we were like, hey, here are the cut samples. Like, can you sew this? And then it was a very sketchy environment to create a label in. And our video shot, I had gotten COVID and I was out of order for 2 months. So I got COVID on the 15th of December, and we shot the campaign on the 15th of February, if I'm not mistaken. And I was like a corpse of a human. It was not cool, but it was like, the show must go on. We got to go. We got to launch. You know, there's so many people that were counting on us and that were involved.
The takeaway for me there is Kickstarter's a way to secure money that then allow brands to invest in things like photographers and branding and the stuff to enable a brand. But you flipped it. You were like, how can we be creative about getting people to do this work ahead of time, ahead of payment, and having them opt into the mission of the brand? And then almost using the Kickstarter, yeah, for financial investment, but also to gauge market desire and votes and people raising their hand to say, I do want to see this brought to life. A great way to get more validation and data points to support the founding of the brand.
I saw the Kickstarter, Lola, as it's our presidential campaign. Let's see if people are going to want to vote for us. Let's see if we can really do this. Because if the Kickstarter failed, I do not think I would have continued the company. As in, not because, oh, it didn't work, so I'm lazy and I don't want to do it. It's just, for me, was the ultimate proof of concept. And if the proof of concept didn't work, well, then we need to alter the concept because the concept isn't working. And so I'm not in the business to spend money I don't have for fun. I do not have a trust fund to allow me to do that. So it was like, okay, we have to be really rational. We have $4 in our bank account. How are we going to launch this? And how are we going to do it? And how are we going to offer a brand that can be merchandised with the luxury brands of the world? Like, it was very important for us for everything to be solid. And the plus size space for men is still inexistent in conversations. It's very new.
I'm glad you brought that up, because over the past few years, we've seen the concept and movement around inclusive sizing, extended sizing, make its way into mainstream vernacular and media everywhere. But the conversations that we've noticed, they typically start and stop at women's wear. There aren't as many brands solving for the male figure. I mean, what's your perspective on, like, why does the industry focus on inclusive sizing only for women? Why aren't menswear also part of this?
I think it comes down to gender roles, society. Like, we are evolving, but being fat for a guy is still a very taboo subject. It's not attractive. We have managed to change ever so slightly our vision of the plus size woman and allowed her to own her sex appeal in 2023 to a certain extent. I still say Ashley Graham, yes, she's plus size, but she's proportioned like a Victoria's Secret model. So at the end of the day, she's a very alluring plus size woman. She does not represent most plus size women today. But we're still having conversations, and that's a great thing. I think men are just more sensitive because society makes it so. We do not see fat, plus size, big and tall men as strong, attractive leaders. We see them as lazy. We see them as unmotivated, funny maybe. We'll give them funny. They can be funny and they can be like the funny sidekick of the hero. And so I think that that narrative is something that is ingrained. It's even ingrained in my mind. I'm now 33. When I started this project, I was 29. It took me 29 years of my life to be able to be comfortable with the idea of talking about my body and my mission and my struggles. And I still struggle with it to this day. And so, you know, society's norms and gender roles have a lot to play with the conversation. It'll get there. We'll get to a place, I think, where we're talking about it more comfortably. But I honestly don't think that men will ever be as comfortable as the generalization, but men as a whole will ever be as comfortable as women are to talk about body issues, just because at the base of it all, men have to be strong. And so that idea is a very hard structure to penetrate.
When you talk about perception, it's really clear to me, though, that your brand is doing the work to shift perception. You are prioritizing the consumer, though, in terms of that journey of self-discovery and finding your own worth. I can imagine as a brand, you have to choose or at least proportion your resourcing towards like, okay, are we trying to shift perception of wide men, or are we trying to make sure wide men know what they deserve? And I feel like when I go through your Instagram, it feels to me like you are doing both, but you have very much prioritized the like your customers feeling confident in themselves. And I think that is, in my mind, like a really important part of this perception shift, because people need to know, like, this is what you deserve.
Yeah, for sure. And it's hard because you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, because you're like, okay, well, I want to speak about the struggles and the issue at hand. But at the end of the day, we're a fashion company. Like, we are here to sell clothes. And also what we are realizing is our guys don't want you to tell them that it's going to be okay. They just want to look great. Guys just want to look great. Guys just want to attract attention. At the end of the day, the conversation is great for them, but they want the proof. They're like, okay, awesome, great. You're telling me to love myself. Show me how. And that, again, is a gross generalization. But in general, what we're realizing as we continue to grow this company is we are first and foremost a fashion company. Our mission is great clothes for confident men. The sub-product and the story behind it is a personal mission. So my personal mission as a founder is body positivity and self-acceptance and confidence. But why the brand's mission is to offer great clothes for confident men. And so I think distincting the two is important.
That's a good point. We're glad you brought that up, though, because something we have noticed when we do surface content that's focused on extending sizing for menswear, like every roundup is pretty repetitive with the same big rocks brands, Chaps, Nike, Wrangler, H&M. It's not typical. And to your point of like good fashion, it's not typical to see a luxury brand carrying extended sizing. So now having experience working at a luxury brand, did you get insight into why luxury brands aren't offering extended sizes? Like, give us the tea. Why aren't they doing it?
100%. And it's not their fault in the sense that what people need to realize in the inclusion conversation is that not everyone can do everything. So at the end of the day, let's say the brand I was working for, Marie St. Pierre, she spent over 30 years crafting her craft, which was clothes for most women who are ambitious, who are amazing, but her aesthetic has always been to draw on a size 2 model. You cannot expect her to understand out of the blue the importance of inclusion and diversity when her motto was her thing. And so we're asking these huge brands to offer sizing for everyone, A, from a business model that makes no sense. Because what you have to understand is already to have 6 or 7 sizes is costing these companies millions of dollars. To add another 5, 6 sizes is incredibly hard. And I'm not saying they shouldn't do it, but their business model was not built that way. And so all of a sudden, we're expecting them to pivot. And it's like, okay, so they're going to pivot. They're going to take the designer that's been designing regular sizes for the last 10 years and ask them, okay, now you're going to design extended sizes. Well, our whole mission at Wide is you can't just extend sizes because proportions are not the same as the body evolves. Lifestyle is not the same. The needs are not the same. And also, if you don't have plus size people designing for plus size people, then what the hell are you doing? Honestly, like, why are we asking regular size designers who design, essentially a part of them is designing for them, to design for a part of society that they have no idea about? They don't know the struggles, the challenges. And so I think that's why it's so important for there to be companies and brands for each segment of the population. There's a reason why the petite market has petite brands. There's a reason why outerwear is a specific market. There's a reason why leather goods are done by make leather workers. It's because specialization is important. And plus size fashion should not be an extension of sizes. Plus size fashion should be plus size fashion.
Yes, yes, yes. And your brand does that. Your pieces and collection have distinct features into your garments that actually benefit the end user, the wearer. Tell us more about these features that you have.
Yeah. So when we started out, one of the things I hated the most was dress shirts. So shirts of any kind, because when you sit down, the buttons always gape or pop. And I thought it was really embarrassing for me. So I was like, you know what? We're going to eliminate buttons. But to eliminate buttons is a challenge on its own. So we created the slip-on sewn seam. So it's a slip-on dress shirt. We created so that it's patterned correctly so that it can be slipped on. And there's just three buttons at the top to adjust the neckline. And that was like an immediate hit. All of our pants are built to hide the crack. And so we have a higher, you know, the rise is just a bit higher in the back, a little lower in the front. We know there's a debate between wearing pants above the belly, under the belly. There's this whole debate. And so we were like, okay, let's try to make a pant that can mold to both. We just yesterday launched the pull-up work pant. It's a pant that has no button, no zip. It's fully in our jersey material. So from the outside, it looks like a dress pant, but you're literally wearing a jogger. We wanted to create clothes that make our men look really hot and really confident, but that are comfortable and that breathe well. So that's where the stretch comes in, the fabric composition comes in, the way they're structured. But essentially, the clothes are tailored to be comfortable and look really great.
Well, you can't just like control drag or command drag on certain sizes and say, okay, it's bigger now. Because what happens is oftentimes, I've even seen this, like I'll be in the comments and people are like, thanks for offering extended sizing, but like, it doesn't look good. It doesn't fit the way it's supposed to. You basically made it bigger, but we didn't consider like all the nuance that make it actually fit. It's mostly just a bigger size. So your precise cuts, fit, and defined aesthetic is so affirming. And something that we love, something that really caught our attention, is the printed cotton overshirt. So while it's your first print and it spans outside your core color palette, it's still very on brand. We want to understand how you strike that, because it still is very distinct to the brand. But like, what considerations went into selecting the print and launching that first print?
Yeah, that was a struggle, because personally, I don't wear prints a lot at all, actually, until this one.
And is that a personal choice?
It is. A lot of the items are a personal choice. So I have to be careful. And that's when the designer comes on, is I'm not designing for Marzad. I'm designing for the Wide man. We are very different men. And so essentially when I'm designing, I have to be like, okay, so what does our guy want to wear? What is he looking for? And the print was something that came up a lot, because our colors are muted. We are in the classic blues, the classic blacks, the classic beiges. We have green. But as a designer, I'm not very color oriented. And so we were getting the comment a lot, like, when are you going to have prints? When are you going to have color? When are you going to have prints? When are you going to have color? So we're like, okay, you know what? Let's give them a print and let's give them color this summer. And when we set out to do the print, we knew that it had to be very on brand. And obviously, this is going to be so cliche, but White Lotus was everywhere. And I had watched it and I was obsessed with the aesthetic and I was obsessed with the lifestyle. So we were like, if we're going to do a print, it has to be White Lotus inspired. And you can see it because we did a linen shirt in pink and beige. So it was very like on brand for the time. And we developed the print and people loved it and they gravitated towards it. And I wanted the print to be something that could be worn all year round, where it wasn't specific to any season or trend. So it's a very classic print. It's an olive print. It's very abstract. But yeah, it's all White Lotus's fault.
And how has the reception been of the launch?
They loved it. They absolutely loved it. It sold really well. And we didn't produce a lot because obviously prints are not our core. But yeah, it was super well received.
Not surprised at all. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
We need to take a moment and talk through your branding. And now hearing a little bit more about the backstory of the branding to launch the Kickstarter, it's putting the pieces together a bit. But the branding is incredible. It's elevated yet classic imagery. Your messaging is concise. It strikes this amazing balance of being inviting, but yet no nonsense. And it's giving well-established brand. And you're like just basically in your toddler years.
Yeah.
We're like, who is the brand marketer? How did you develop and find this brand presence? Like, tell us everything.
So it was a team collective. We are very strong in branding as a team. However, it was one of our co-founders who really, and this was not me, you know, if you had asked me 3 years ago, I literally told her, I was like, well, can't we just do it on Word? Like, do we have to like spend all this money? Like, it's a lot. Like, you guys know, like a branding mission can cost from $10,000 to $15,000, and so that is what we paid. And so I couldn't believe that that was the price, but now I understand it and I understand why. But initially I was like, yeah, can we not just like type it up on Word and call it a day? And my partner was like, absolutely not. And so we met with a few branding agencies in Montreal, and here's the thing, Montreal, like New York, has a certain je ne sais quoi when it comes to aesthetics. We are very aesthetic driven. It was important for us to be, like I said, professional and elite from the start. We really wanted to be like something where our guys came in and, I mean, we have a 2.2 second retention rate with men online. So you have 2.2 seconds to catch their attention or they're out. And so we knew everything had to be perfect. And it was essentially the branding agency that came up, that listened to us, listened to our pitch, and then came up with this entire scheme. And then we took that logo and the deck and then applied it, modified it, made it our own. The photo shoots are stories. And so that is something that we're all used to. And so I'd say the main thing is it comes down to experience. We have done this before. And so now we're just altering it. So where a lot of young designers make the mistake is they're testing on their brand. They're learning who they are through their brand, which is a good thing sometimes, but if you're not a prodigy, it could be really bad. And so we had made mistakes with other brands, other companies, because altogether, the partners, we have over 35 years of experience. That's where I think it's so important for people to go and get experience before launching their companies.
You had the core elements of what you needed, and then the agency just really helped bring it to life.
Exactly.
So a note for listeners out there, go check out Why the Brand website if you haven't yet, because strong branding like this, often it comes across so effortless because it's so well done. We don't realize, oh, I'm having a wonderful time reading this. I know exactly who it's for. But for brands to speak to and resonate with audiences, not only in your product, but also in all these brand elements that is needed to get the consumer from point A to point B through the journey to your product. Like, it is so difficult to do that we often only notice it when it's done poorly. And so I do feel like what a case study that your brand is to showing how to execute that flawlessly. And so that was, it's gorgeous.
Thank you. Keep in mind, Lola, that our initial website was nothing like the website today. So the website today is literally a cumulative of all of our talents, but also all of our consultants that we have now. UX was not a thing when we launched. We're not e-com founders. We are fashion designers, fashion executives. And so when we launched in e-com, we had no idea what we were doing. And that was a mistake that we rectified very quickly, is we went and got partners and people to help us build UX. And so you're completely right. It looks easy, but there are so many people and so many brains that go behind creating this. So do not take it lightly. If you're going to do an e-com brand as well, hold on to your horses. It's going to be a ride.
And the thing too is like, time is not the only variable here, because I think, or variant, I think people test their brand in real time. And it's like, you don't have to wait to be like 10 years old to be like, now we know who we are. That work can be done up front in a short time frame. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be wild. But like, you don't have to wait for that evolution. You can proactively source it.
There's a logical line where you're like, okay, I know I'm ready and I'm not. And I think that if people had the self-dialogue more often, they would know. You know when you're ready to embark on this journey that no one is ready for. You can never be ready for this journey. I'm still not ready and I'm 4 years in. You know what I mean? But you know when it's time and when you've gotten enough experience and you've been punched in the face enough times by your industry. And you know when it's time to go on your own, if you want to go on your own. Because mind you, it's not like rainbows and butterflies. It is hard work. And it's lows. It's much more lows than there are highs. You have to ask yourself if you really want it.
The pep talk we all need.
Yeah, my God. It's because we glamorize entrepreneurship so much today. And I think that that's a major problem because working for someone else is such a blessing as well. You do not have to start your own company to be validated and to be good. And we need to stop with the, if you're not an entrepreneur, you're not a winner. That's not true. Because let me tell you, I feel like a loser 99% of the time. The 1% is great and it's awesome, but this is a personal mission above anything. But at the end of the day, it's very hard. Very fun, very cool, do it, but also keep in mind that it's hard.
Well, if you're ever looking for a pep talk, you just call Frankie and I because we think he's won. I mean, why the brand is the contributions and effect and impact is clearly just so grand and beyond just, it's something more than yourself. And so thank you for doing that. Also, we've never interviewed someone from Canada before, and what a distinct country. You're a mandatory bilingual country, but being both in English and French. What does that mean for running a brand?
We have different provinces here. Quebec is where Montreal is the only province that is fully bilingual because of the French-Canadian heritage, but the country is a French-Canadian country. And so in order to sell a product in Canada, it has to be in English and in French. In Quebec, French is first, English is second. In the rest of Canada, English is first, but French is second, which means our hand tags, our labels, our communications, our website, our Instagram, our social media, everything is in English and French. So we were talking with Frankie about assets. All of our assets are in English and in French. So when we're doing a launch, let's say when we launched the pants this weekend, we had about 11 visual assets. And then we had all of the copy. All of that has to be translated. All of that has to be done in English and in French. And so it does intensify the experience quite a bit. But again, we're very proud of our heritage too. So.
Wow. And the fact that it's flipped, like French is prioritized in Quebec and then it's English outside of that. Does that manifest in like the labeling has to have the order a certain way?
Yeah. Well, so let's say all of our hand tech, let's say, and our stuff, French is first, English is second. But if we're exporting to the US, then we flip it. So in Canada, we don't because they're used to it. But in the US, it's only English. And so we have different labels. It's not easy, but again, that's just if we were, let's say, exporting one day to, I don't know, the United Emirates, let's say, well, we would have to do in Arabic. So it's like, it's just part of the game. But yeah, it's another added challenge depending on your market, for sure.
I just look at that as like, what an OPEX, like what an extra operating cost to like always just bake into part of your process from any content creation. And thank you for bringing up that you sell to the US. Where do you sell to and how can people find the brand?
We're 100% direct to consumer. So we are online only, whythebrand.com. We don't do wholesale. And so we ship all over the United States. So whenever you want some great plus size fashion for men, just head to whythebrand.com and we will ship to you.
Ooh, we will be repeating that. Love it. Well, this was just lovely, wasn't it?
Well, thank you for having me. I saw my team was like, there are these two girls that really, really want to talk to you. And I was like, and I was like, yeah, sure, let's do it. And then I saw and I was like so embarrassed. I was like, how did we not respond to them earlier? Like, oh, we're so rude. I'm so sorry.
Lola had me dying because Lola was like in the comments. Like, check your DMs.
I loved it so much. And I was like, you know what? Like, we're such losers. I'm so sorry. But yeah, I'm like, thank you so much for having me. It means so much.
You are the first person I was like, everyone, I like DM'd his personal, I DM'd the brand, and then I was like a fucking spammer, like, check your DMs.
Lola, I swear to God, when we launched, so help me God, like, I believe in this so much, because when we launched, we didn't have any models. I was on Grindr, and I found most of our models on Grindr. Like, we were like, you know what? And we DM'd 3,000 men for the Kickstarter. So I believe it. That's why we're here today. You have to. You have to. There's no choice.
You know what? Grindr should be paying you.
A lot of people should.
Oh my gosh. Oh, thank you, Marza. This was so cool.
Yeah, thank you guys. This is awesome.
Damn, I love these brands.
Same. I mean, I love that they're just into getting on a podcast and having a very real conversation about what's enabled their brand to survive.
I love it. Okay, let's keep learning together. And while you're out there, if it's in your journey to make a purchase today, check out some of the brands we've been talking to.
And if it's in your journey to show us some love, hit that subscribe button.
See you next time.
Bye.